This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
A momentous occasion, Andrew. Let's just say that. It's a momentous occasion because congratulations. Andrew, you're the first person to like really just take over and really say, this is what I want to do. You took the reins, and the guest that I have lined up for next week was supposed to be on this week, but I okayed it with them, and they got bumped. Congratulations, Andrew. And honestly, this is what I dreamed of. I want people with it, with passion comes this, where like you reached out to me and went, this is what we got to do, DJ. We should do this. And I'm like, done. Let's do it. So Andrew. Where are we going today? I'm super excited.
Well, I think anybody that that has listened to us on the last one and has listened to you knows that we're massive Star Wars fans. And this is the release of the double episode of Obi-Wan, the six episode limited series they keep calling it. So
yeah, which is a disappointment, but exciting at the same time. Because you're like, wait a minute.
I guess the way I look at it is if they give us six really good episodes, then I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
So I prefer, you know, the quality over the quantity. And if it, you know, not to spoil anything, but I think they've got the pacing down pretty well right off the hop. And I think we're going to be in for six very good episodes.
Yeah. How do you want to do this? We should get that out of the way up front. Do you want to do some spoilers later? And I can actually throw the popcorn in later if you want to talk for a while. And it's honestly, it's up to you. I mean, we could talk spoiler free because there's a ton of home theater stuff we could talk about with this and other stuff, whatever.
Well, we can start spoiler free and then, you know, we'll give a good warning and we'll jump into it and let people know that we're about to talk, you know, specifics. And, you know, and I just want to say that, you know, I've only watched it three times now. And the first time I watched it, I'm not lying. I got up at 4 a.m. and grabbed my dog and went downstairs and we watched it. So couldn't wait. And then I watched it a second time. And then I sort of drowsed, you know, I was drowsy and I watched it the third time. So I still, you know, I like to watch things a lot before I start talking about it because there's lots of little stuff that you forget. But, you know, I think we can muddle our way through this.
Yeah, I've seen it twice. I saw it that first morning yesterday. Well, as we're recording this, it would be yesterday morning. I watched it. And then my son hadn't seen it yet, so we watched it again this morning today before I went out, before I got to work. So I've seen both episodes twice. I'm very interested to hear what you saw and little things, because I feel like you're more like my buddy John. You're more well-versed in all of the Star Wars lore. Did you read the books and stuff, too?
I read all the books.
Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. I've watched all the movies. I get into the comics.
I've read all the books up until sort of this last trilogy, so I haven't read any of the new stuff. But before Disney bought them, I've read everything that they had.
And is a lot of that just been decanonized?
Yeah, it's all what they call legends now.
It's all right. So it's all actually been because it used to be canon, right? And then when Disney bought it, they said, nope, that's not it. We're going to go with this now.
Exactly. So, I mean, what they've done is they've kept, you know, Admiral Thrawn. Mm-hmm. So that was the one piece that they kept, which was amazing because he was one of the best, like he was one of the first new characters. So they kept him. But yeah, they've got rid of a lot of the backstories from a lot of stuff.
Okay. So, to be fair, and I put a tweet out about this today, somebody was commenting on how the series, the original prequel series, not I call it the original, but only because it's the prequels, yeah. But I'm sorry, the prequel series, I rewatched that in anticipation of Obi-Wan. And wow. I mean, just in the theater and everything, just playing it after watching movie after movie, like we do in our theaters, watching that again, it is so heavy CGI. It is
it's,
I don't want to say it's tough to watch, but it's almost tough to watch because things are so good now, right? Like,
that's the problem, is because at the time, you know, Jurassic Park in, what was it, 94 or
93?
Yeah, 93. That kind of set the benchmark for CGI, and it still stands up. And same thing with T2. But then, for whatever reason, when they did the, you know, the Phantom Menace, they were all green screen and CGI, and it, especially in 4K, it does not hold up. And, you know, the, in the Attack of the Clones, all of the beasts and all of the different CGI there, they just look clunky. I mean, Jabba the Hutt looked terrible, and, you know, it just, it was weird. And then, you know, you look at what they did in the last trilogy and the CGI was bang on, and then getting to the Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, the, when they de-aged Luke the second time in Book of Boba Fett, that was impressive.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and then there's so much that goes into that. I mean, so for instance, I'm pretty sure Phantom Menace, if it wasn't Phantom Menace, it might have been Attack of the Clones, was the first movie to be shot 100% digitally.
Yep, I think you're correct.
Okay. So the problem is, now here's where we get into an issue, is that when they shot that back then, I don't think they even were thinking 4K.
No, they weren't, and that's the problem. So it doesn't upscale well.
Exactly. It's tough to, so now, like, watching that that prequel trilogy, it feels like you're watching a video game. Like, everything, the background is all digitally shot, digitally like rendered, right? It's all just green screen, like you said. Everything is in there. And when you go to upconvert that to a 4K image, it just, you just don't have it there. Whereas if you go back and you take, you know, Chariots of Fire or something that was shot on film, there is no resolution to that. That's film. So you can go as high as you want. There's so much more information you can pull out of that. And while I still enjoyed it, and I actually, watching it again, it used to be my favorite was the third one, because I loved how we got to episode 4 and how we got to see, you know, like the fall of Anakin at that time. And we all, what I thought about the third episode was so cool is that we all knew what was coming, but how were they going to get us there? Right. So that was always kind of fun. I always thought the first one was just kind of boring, all that Senate talk and all the blah, blah, blah. And I thought, the war in Attack of the Clones, where we had talked about the Clone Wars, we'd heard about that with Luke talking to Obi-Wan, you were in the Clone Wars. And I thought that would be good. Rewatching them, the second one to me is the worst one. I enjoy the first one more now, knowing all of the background that we get, and there's just so much more for you there. And I think for some reason, I still enjoy them all, but I think it goes, you know, if I were to rank them, it goes 3-1-2.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think they just progressed with the story a lot better. I think in the third one, it was a bit better moving. It was just more to the point, and we knew that this was sort of the finale. So it had a little bit more punch. And I just think they had advanced a little bit in the CGI, 'cause it looks better. Overall, but yeah, I have to agree. Attack of the Clones is probably my least favorite of all the Star Wars films ever made.
Of all of them, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I am partial, obviously, to the original trilogy, but I actually enjoy the last three more than probably the first, than the prequels.
I do as well. I mean, I found that, you know, although the story wasn't as cohesive because they didn't have a thought of where they were going, which is the one thing that's the one fault that I always give with the new movies, is that nobody sat down, like the Marvel Universe, they know where they're going to be 12 movies out, and they just tell a storyline. It seemed like they had the first one, and it started off strong. JJ did a great job. Mm. And then they, you know, had it went with a different director in the second one, and it was a completely different tone and a completely different vision, and it just didn't connect the same way. And then the third one didn't connect at all, sort of as a flowing story.
Right.
So I would have preferred I would have preferred that they delay the, you know, eighth and ninth movie, had come down with a more solid storyline that was more cohesive. Keep, you know, JJ as the, you know, I do like the way that, you know, a single director can sometimes string something together. Mm-hmm. Or just get someone not, because like I like Rian Johnson. He's a great director.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a great job with Star Wars. I would have liked to see what he would have done with three movies, right?
Right.
So, you know, but I just think that it lacked really with a lot of cohesiveness. And I keep saying that because it seemed like three separate stories together, right?
Right. So can I counter that with their line of thinking? I understand what you're saying. I agree with it, actually. But I also kind of don't fault their line of thinking because, like, you referenced the MCU, and they're kind of doing that in the MCU in that, so, like, you have different, like, James Gunn did Guardians, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't do Iron Man. And you brought in different directors for different things, but it all comes together when you get to that final one. So we're okay with it there, but the thing is with the MCU, it's like, well, look at the Thor movies. You have three different movies, and they started off with Kenneth Branagh, right? And bringing that more of a, like, almost like a Shakespearean type character. They used that, it was more royalty, more regal, like whatever they did with Thor in the first movie. But then by the time he progresses to the final movie, Ragnarok, he's more funny and he's more fun. And to the point that Chris Hemsworth actually enjoys playing the character more now. So he signed on for more, but he even says himself that if I had just stayed with that first character, if they kept it like Kenneth Branagh all the way through, he wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. It wasn't as fun. But what I like about that is that progression is the reason Thor is so funny now and is so much fun to watch. It's, we got to see where he was in the first one. He was a different character. And you got to see that progression, and different directors did that. So we were okay with that there. But in the Star Wars universe, we're fan. We're not just fans. It's part of us. And that needs to be done to our liking. And I think that's where it feels like they tried to use the same recipe that they're doing in the MCU, but that doesn't translate with Star Wars fans because we have expectations.
We do.
You see what I mean?
But you know, and I'll say the same thing with The Mandalorian. They rotated directors every episode, and I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And you could definitely tell the different styles of different directors as they went through it. But I guess going back to my point, they had they knew where it was going. So they had that vision. So, I mean, I agree with you that if they would have had a better vision of where they were going, you're right. It could have been cool to see different directors go through and then put their own spin on it. Because I do agree with Thor, is I didn't like the first Thor. I didn't like the first couple Thor movies because he was too dull, even into Avengers. Right. It was really when Ragnarok hit you know, and again, I just wonder if they realized how funny Chris Hemsworth really is. And they're like, because he was, you know, this, you know, very, very, you know, sardonic and very prim and proper, you know, demigod. And then all of a sudden, you know, in Thor Ragnarok, he's just, you know, acting like a bro, right? He's a frat
boy. Yeah, absolutely. But that's the thing. It's like, do you get that? It's almost like the Leslie Nielsen effect, right? Like, Leslie Nielsen did all dramas coming up as an actor. And then he gets to do, like, I think he was in Airplane first. Obviously, he was in Airplane before he was in Naked Gun. And it was that deadpan humor that you were just like, oh, my God, he is just so funny. But to most people, the older generations, when they saw Naked Gun, they were like, because that's not Leslie Nielsen. He's such a dramatic actor, right? So it was like, it was that juxtaposition of that person that made it that much more funny. And I agree with you. I don't think that they planned out the Thor movies in that way. Like, let's make them like just a serious character and then we'll open them up. I think I agree with you, Andrew. I think it's more like, hey, he's actually funny. Let's move this along and make it, because they weren't getting the feedback from the fans that we could get more out of this character. But sometimes, like, those mistakes early on, they actually develop into and help enhance your enjoyment when you get to Ragnarok and be like, look at how stiff he was. But that's who he was as a character in that arc as well. Exactly. So it kind of all works. Like, mistakes happen, but let's work with that mistake and make it part of the story. And I think, like, with, you know, the final trilogy, the one thing they were missing was that person, that Feige person to guide it. Whereas it seems kind of just like, by the time you get to the end of, you know, Rise of Skywalker, you're like, it felt like a lot of Band-Aids are being thrown on, right? Yeah. And I don't have a problem with that. You and I talked about it, I think, last time. I enjoyed it, but I think a lot of people had like, oh, they could have done this so much better.
So I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
I'm just looking at my thing. It doesn't look like on my end, like I'm recording.
You're not. I record here on my own.
Okay. All right. We'll just cut that part out. Cause I just saw,
no, we'll leave it there. Don't worry. That's fine.
Okay. It's like, I was like, my camera's not rolling.
I'm that's
like,
yeah.
I'm like, have we been talking and nothing's going on?
Oh, trust me. And that's a great, and that's why we won't cut it out. And I love when this stuff comes up. Things happen all the time. And a warning to you and everybody that ever comes on, I get sick to my stomach because I've lost stuff and there's nothing. It's computers, right? So we could have a great conversation and anybody that ever comes on, and it's no fault of mine or anything, but Mike was the one that was on last week, right? And when I was done and I went to upload it into where I edit it and put everything together, the tracks weren't there. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
That happened with one of your comic ones too.
Yup. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But here's the funny thing. When that stuff, I figured out, I bet you if I went back and look at that comic one that John and I, that I had to redo, I'll bet you the tracks are there. I just found out last week, because when I went and put mics, dropped it in, there's some settings in Adobe Premiere that, look, I've been doing this a long time, but I'm literally learning on the fly. I'm teaching myself and I love it. That's the challenge. And I love these challenges. But it's when you have a great conversation like that, like you were saying, Andrew, like, we're not hitting record. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, I would feel awful if that happened to somebody. And if that had happened with like Mike last week or any of the guests that I have on, that people take their time, like Ralph Potts coming on with me. He literally carved out an hour for me, and I would have loved to have talked longer. He would have too, but that's all he had. Imagine if I lost that. I'd feel sick to my stomach, but it could happen. And it has happened to me. So it's like, and so for everybody, yourself included, Andrew, anybody that comes on, it's just know that, yeah, we're recording it, but who knows? Someday I might have to be like, buddy. And Mike and I had recorded early. So I was like, if I can't save this, I would have just been like, can we reschedule and we'll just do it again? And we would have, I'm sure. But it just feel, and we would have laughed about it and we would have had another conversation that I would have recorded, but you never know. But yeah, no, I record on OBS on this end and everything works out that way. So, but yeah, so I found the settings that are actually that were making an issue. Cause when I dropped Ralph's in, same thing happened. And I was like, oh God, are you kidding me? And then I took a couple hours of research and figuring it out and watching YouTube videos on how people save their stuff, and you're like, oh, and I literally saw what I'd been doing and what happened, and it was just settings in Adobe, and I boom, 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 and everything's cooking along, so we should be good. But hey, it's technology, just like our home theaters, right? Crap goes wrong and we gotta problem solve it. So
Knock on wood, I haven't had too much to problem solve lately, but.
Well, let's do a quick segue on that. The sofa baton. How's that going?
So
I want to hear firsthand from you, since, you know, Tom and Rob are talking about all the great research you're doing, but yet they don't have you on their show. Come on, Rob.
I'm too busy writing articles.
I know.
But
for AV Gadgets, for people that don't know, this is the Andrew that AV Rant talks about all the time. You're writing for, and you did kind of the same thing. Didn't you just reach out to Tom and said,
I did.
I'd like to try, because you'd never written before, right?
Well, actually, I wrote when I used to do a lot of model making. I actually did a lot of reviews and I wrote on a blog there, but it became a bit, you know, cumbersome and just a lot of work.
Yeah.
And, you know, as with a lot of hobbies, sometimes you just lose interest. And that was one of the ones I was losing interest in. But I've never lost interest in home theater.
Right.
So, you know, Tom was saying, you know, about AV Gadgets, and I was bored, and I was like, you know, it was a pandemic. And I'm like, you know what? I wonder if Tom needs a writer. So I reached out and, you know, said, can I write for you? And, you know, we did a quick exchange. I did some test material for him. So he said, yeah, no problem. So I've been writing for, just under a year probably now.
I was going to say right around a year. I remember when you came on. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm coming up on 100 articles for him.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you.
But yeah, no, the sofa baton, you know, Rob and I had talked about it, and he made a really good point the last podcast, is that everybody's angry that it doesn't work out of the box, but
right. They
don't remember the original Logitech software and the original remotes and how clunky those things were. And those things were terrible.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm surprised that Logitech made it with some of the releases they've had, because, you know, some were just not that good, but people needed something. And Logitech was there, so they just kept improving. So I say the same thing with sofa baton. It's not quite there. Not everything works. I mean, I still can't get my Hue lights to work with it, and I still can't do the Google integration. But those aren't deal breakers. But I mean, I've set up all of my stuff. It switches inputs. It does everything that I need it to do, and it does it well. I mean, I don't need anything fancy for a remote. I don't need touchscreen or anything like that. It's a nice feature, but I don't need it. So I've, you know, said that they're probably 80%, 90% to where they need to be. And if they keep progressing the way they are and they keep continuing to, you know, listen to the people, get the feedback, you know, fix the problems, add the codes, they're going to have a really good, you know, a really good one. And then I guarantee you that if enough people pick up on this thing, that when version 2 comes out or whatever they're going to make again, it's going to be like, The Harmony, the next one will be better. Right. And then they'll eventually get to the Elite model, where that will be the kind of go-to gold standard remote again.
Yeah.
But they just need the time to get there. Do I think that $200? Yeah, I think they're about $200 American, or is it $189 American?
Yeah.
So that's still pretty pricey.
Still cheaper than an Elite. Even when the Elite was selling, like, before the markup, like, I think you can still find the Elites now, but they're like $400-$500.
Oh, if you can get one. I mean, right. I was lucky. I got my Elite for $80 with a hub on Kijiji, which is our version of Craigslist. And somebody was selling it in Ontario, and I said, hey, are you willing to ship? So $80 plus 20 shipping in my pocket, you know, in my hands for $100. And I've used it ever since. And I still use my Harmony because it integrates with my Google Home, so I can talk to it. But I've been using the sofa baton completely exclusively since I got it about a month and a half ago.
eBay, $899. Elite Universal Remote Control. Somebody selling one for $269 on eBay. But these like $900 or $1,000 still in the box.
Wow.
For a Harmony Elite. Yep.
Yeah. I would never, never pay that.
No, no.
I mean, for that kind of money, you go Control 4.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be fair, though, with a Control, the thing is, I want Control 4 because I can integrate that. That has capabilities that's going to, I'm going to pull capabilities out of the Kaleidoscape, right?
Yeah.
But the thing I don't like about it is I can't do it.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, and that's, I don't want to say it's a non-starter, but like you said, it's like every time you add a new piece of gear or you want to update something, you have to call somebody. And that to me is tough because I come up with ideas all the time. Oh, maybe I could do this. Can I change that? You know, and it's, but from what I've heard, if you get to know the person that programs your stuff, similar to like how I know Jim and my projector and stuff, you can work with them and they can literally do it. It's not like it used to be where, like talking with, Brett Bjorkqvist, he's actually a Control 4 guy now. He went to the classes and everything. And he's like, once you get this going, they don't actually have to send somebody to your house. They can do everything remotely. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, and a lot of them are doing that. There's other remotes, higher end remotes that do the same thing. And once you get to know the person, you can say, hey, can we have this done? I want this in my room or theater or whatever. Cause, and a lot of times people like, where the big expense is where you try to run multiple rooms, which they're all capable of. But if you just run one room, it's not as expensive. You can really simplify it and save some money because you don't need as big of a hub. But I'm looking into it. Yeah. But
that's one thing I've never really been interested in having multi-room audio, because you generally will have to sacrifice on the sound. So you get, you know, the in-ceiling, down firing ones. And I mean, they're okay for background noise, but they drive me insane with their kind of tinniness. And if I'm going to listen to something, I want to listen to something decent.
Right. Yeah. I run Sonos through my house.
Sonos makes a good product.
Yes, they do. And I mean, Rob nailed it the other day. Tom and Rob talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and it'd be like, people like, oh, I want this. And then like, you'll be on the forums and be like, the guy has Sonos, don't recommend something that he has to fiddle with, because that's what's great about Sonos. It's so plug and play. I've recommended it to people. I've installed a Sonos home theater where with the, the Arc, two rears and the subwoofer system. And it sounds great.
They sound really good. So yeah. I have a Denon Heos upstairs, and it's okay. It's better outside. I just don't like the sound in my room. And of course I'm used to listening to my stereo, so it's difficult to go from my stereo to those.
Yeah. I've run Sonos. I've had Sonos for many years. When I got my Denon, I looked into the Heos. I actually bought a couple of Heos speakers and that was supposed to be the competitor, right? That was supposed to take over for Sonos, and it was supposed to be better because it'll integrate seamlessly with your receiver. And it just, the application just it wasn't as user friendly as Sonos is. It was,
oh, I agree.
The integration, the app that you use on your phone, it just wasn't as easy to do. And yeah, it's, if I can integrate my Sonos into my receiver, you just have to buy that little bit, and that's a little bit more pricey, but you can still do it, right? And
exactly,
it's just so simple. And like showing people, like, hey, look, I have my Sonos system runs outside my house. It's all wired speakers to an old receiver that has that piece, right, that hub for the Sonos system. It goes right into the receiver, so that works. But then I've my bedroom, I have a sound bar. I have a sound bar in the living room with two speakers in the back, so that I don't have a subwoofer in there, but I'm still getting a little bit of surround sound in my living room. I have a one in my kitchen. I have a three in the garage. It's just, and they can all play the same thing. They can all play something different. It's super easy to do. People come over and hijack it. Oh, I want to play this now. And they just go on the app and boom. I installed it in a bar. My local bar. I gave it to them. These two women we know, they bought the bar. And as a housewarming type thing, I set them up with a Sonos system. I set them up with underneath the bar, underneath the TV, I connected a play bar, the smaller one. And then in the dining area, I put a Sonos one. And then in the back corner of the bar area, I put another Sonos one. So I gave them three speakers. And because it's connected to the TV with the bar, you can now, like, on sports night, the whole place can be playing what's coming out of that TV, right? It's awesome. They love it. And they had like a, I want to say something like a 12 channel system running, you know, back from the, with the graphic equalizer, the old school stuff, but in ceiling speakers, and they had 12 speakers all around the place. This thing kills that. Three speakers and it kills it. And they love it. Every now and then it'll go haywire, just like anything with Wi-Fi and stuff. And I'll get a phone call. DJ, this isn't working. Did you try unplugging everything and plug it back in? Oh yeah, it's all working now.
Anything with Wi-Fi, turn it off, turn it back on.
Exactly. Exactly.
I do miss EQs though in our systems.
The graphic equalizers and watching absolutely. The booms, watching everything go up and down like a waterfall. Yeah. So much fun.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I had one always, but I never used it as an EQ. I just used it as a spectrum analyzer because I'd like to see it jump up and down because in the 90s, that's what you did. And you can actually get them. They have a built-in. Oh yeah, but they're terrible. I mean, they have a built-in mic, so all they're doing is sampling it. They're not actually connected to your system.
Yeah.
I'm very tempted to grab one and just throw it in my system for fun and nostalgia, but
yeah. I used to have it when I shopped car stereos. I wanted one where you got the graphic and you were like, and you're driving watching it.
Well, I think that's still, you know, that's one of the big things with Macintosh amps is they still have the VU meters built into them. And that's, you know, that's one of the big selling points for, well, aside from the name Macintosh, but a lot of people love that iconic look. And actually the Jeep Wagoneer has Macintosh systems in it. The new Wagoneer.
Really?
Yeah. In Canada, at least, it's $120,000+ vehicle.
Right.
But on the on-screen display, it's got a Macintosh amp.
That's awesome. But I got away from that. Again, you were saying before, like different hobbies you fall away from. I think I was saying on Twitter, one of the things about home theater that's always, it was an email. I was talking with a listener and I emailed him back and I was like, one of the things that has kept me in home theater for almost 40 years now is that it's hard to get bored. The entire purpose of this hobby is the evolution of the hobby, right? So it's always evolving. I felt like car audio, it kind of, when you reach a certain level and there's only so much you can do, you're in an environment that's not conducive to great sound, right? There's too much noise. So it was fun. It was fun trying to problem solve your way through it. But once you've done it, there's only so much you can do. And then you're off. It's like, all right, what? I'm going to get a louder amp. Who cares? There's still road noise. There's still engine noise. There's still all sorts of stuff that you're dealing with. And it's easy to evolve out of that. Whereas home theater, there's always new technology. There's new sights, sounds, and ways to problem solve around the room. That it's just been so much fun that you really, it's hard to lose interest.
So speaking of new technology, when I went to pick up my new turntable today, they had the brand new Samsung QN9, whatever their new 2022 AK is. They had it up on the wall and it is stunning. I thought I was looking at an OLED.
Oh, okay.
It is amazing. Now, $6,500 Canadian for a 65-inch television. So it is definitely, you know, premium. But I was incredibly impressed with the picture of that because I've had Samsung televisions in the past and I've sold them. But, I've always bought mid-tier ones. But that new flagship QD LED or whatever they're...
Yeah,
they're,
I can't keep up.
Yeah. When I hear Tom just kind of give up on it, I'm the same thing. Whatever their new one is, it is impressive. And, you know, for $6,500, it better be good.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, for 65 inch, $6,500, it's, you know, how good can we get though? And it's,
well, I think micro LED, we keep saying this. When you can start making a television your own size with panels and you know, that's going to be where we are. And, you know, I keep thinking, you know, is our projectors over? Well, if you know, if you want a big screen, projector's really the only way to get that big screen right now.
Right.
But if they make it so that you can get 120 inch micro LED in, you know, in pieces,
right,
that could be the thing. That could be the thing that would sway a lot of people away from projectors to that new technology. But of course, we're a ways away from that. And, you know, I think a micro LED setup is still like $100,000.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's, and then what size do they go with?
Yeah.
Right. Because so say like for my, I have a 110 inch screen. Well, that would be four 55 inch TVs, right? Yeah. Micro LEDs. You could get the exact same thing. Do you divide it by four? Do you divide it by say 12? You could buy a bunch of littler ones.
Yep.
And you put them up, but now you're getting into what's that resolution, you know? And it's like, because imagine how fine a resolution that would be if you had 12, and like how small of those is each pixel in each of those 12. They have to be really fine. But now you're going to be going with, you could get even fine. You could be at 16, you know, instead of 4K, you could be at 16K. Because if you line up a bunch of 4K little tiny ones and they go all the way across, that's even more resolution. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and at some point, the human eye can only see so much resolution, so you're just wasting all of this technology. Same thing with hearing, you know, as, you know, you get lower and lower, you can only hear so low, you can feel it. But, you know, how low do you need a speaker to go? I mean, 17 hertz is enough to rattle your insides. Do you really need a 10 hertz subwoofer?
So here's one for you, Andrew. Going along the lines of, okay, your lower end of sound, you can't see it. Oh, I hear it, but you can feel it, right? You feel that bass. So do we get to the point where this projector or this display is putting out so much light, you can't see it, but it's, you can feel it. You literally get warmer.
Oh, I'm sure they'll, I'm sure imagine that technology comes on. They'll do something as technology, you know, eventually they're just going to implant stuff in our brains and we'll just see it.
The new LG OLED comes with sunscreen.
Like, Smell-o-vision.
It's so bright that it's going to burn you if you don't, like, you know, lather up. It's like, you can't even see this light. It's so bright. It's just going to burn you. You're going to get singed. Like, it's crazy. Like, and that I could see that as an ad campaign instead of the old, what was it? The Mac, what was it? Maxman? What the hell was it? We all know it. The guy sitting there and the sound is blowing him in his chair,
Maxell.
Like blowing him back.
Yep.
Maxell, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's blowing him back in his chair. And, for those of you listening and you heard last week's podcast with Tom, there was a sound grab there that I just said that people can say. But could you see that? I could see that ad, like, only now we're talking about the picture and it's so bright that it's like it's burning you. So where are we going? What I do say, and I don't hear this enough, where the resolution, I think, and they do have to keep pushing the envelope, go into 8K, go into 16K. It's not necessarily in our displays. I think 4K is fine. Anything over that, I mean, we can't even see 4K as it is.
No.
So anything over that is ridiculous. But when you shoot at the higher resolution, it enables you in the editing process to get zoom ins that you couldn't get before. And I think that's super important, because for the artist, for the producer, be like, you could just have one camera and it could look like close up and you can zoom. I know that from just doing this stupid podcast, like how I can zoom in and do different things that when I'm filming myself, I'm like, if I can be in 4K here, I can give you I can give you different perspectives all off the same shot.
Yeah.
And you see, I watch now, knowing all this stuff and having utilized it, watching TV shows, you'd be like, this is all that's all the same camera. Right. But it looks like all these different cuts and all these different edits, but it's all the same shot. And the higher resolution enables you to get in so much finer on these people. Yeah. That's where I think all the resolution's going to go. But for us on the end, they should want just a standard. Cause like, if you just cut it off at four, that enables that 8K camera to do so much more in that 16K camera. Whereas if they start giving us 8K, well, now you can't zoom in anymore, right? I shot it in 8K. That's what I shot is what I got. And I think on the editing side, they'd be much happier if they could just keep us at 4K.
I agree. And plus, with, you know, the technology like the volume that they use in Star Wars, that's really adding that realism, because it's all like the lighting gets brighter, it's forced perspective. So as you walk towards it, it changes their perspective. So you're right. I mean, and I'm sure that Disney is shooting in really high resolution so that they can do all of that different stuff and that they can do all that. But just to see the technology changes that they've made is also really impressive. So I think that we're going to see some really impressive movies coming out, you know, with some great scenes and some great CGI, and just, you know, I'm really, like I said, I'm really excited with every time they bring in a cool new technology. I remember when they brought up the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. You go back to that, because that was one of the first, like, truly cool CGIs that you're looking at and going, oh my, that looks like a real dinosaur.
Right. And I love the way they marketed that. They marketed it like obviously, like he did Jaws. We went the whole movie in Jaws without seeing the shark. Well, the marketing they knew. And if you watch any of the extras or the behind the scenes, and a lot of it was because they were promising something they weren't even sure if they could deliver yet.
Yeah.
Right. But then it played out, because you were just like, I can't wait to get in there and see those dinosaurs. There wasn't a single dinosaur in any of the marketing leading up to the movie in 93.
Yep.
Then when the movie finally came out, I remember going into the theater and seeing people come out, and coming out of the theater and seeing people that were like, I can't wait to see them. Did they look real? And people would be like, what'd you think? Oh, you're like, they're spectacular. You were just like, oh my God. Yeah. Because it was, that was it. And I think some of that amazement is kind of lost on us now, right? Our expectations are just so high now.
Well, I agree. I mean, we expect the very best movies at all times. And that's why I've always said, you know, I put my brain, like, did you see Morbius?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We talked about this. I thought it was great.
I did, too.
I took my brain out and I put it on the shelf, and I had some bourbon and I enjoyed it.
Take your brain out.
Yep.
You soaked it.
But I really enjoyed it. And I saw the Rotten Tomatoes score. And I was like, uh-oh. And I saw, I stayed away from reviews because I don't always trust reviewers.
Right.
But it was a decent movie. Was it Shakespeare? No. But I wasn't expecting it. It's a comic book movie that is supposed to be a popcorn movie. And I was thoroughly, you know, impressed by it. Yeah. I thought that, what's his name?
Jared Leto.
Thank you. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
I thought he's a good actor. He's a bit weird, but I think he did a good job. And I think that, you know, they got the look down as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've seen it multiple times in the theater. Yeah. It's already out. Yeah. I can't wait for people to see this on disc because it is so good. It is.
Yeah.
It does for HDR what I think a lot of people are going to be like, wow, because there's so many bright scenes and such great contrast with stuff in the background. And the sound,
the mix was amazing.
Oh, it's, have you seen it at home yet?
I did.
Oh, it's awesome.
So I was so impressed because the overheads, like when they were, you know, and again, not to spoil it. So if anybody hasn't seen it, but as they're doing some of the fight scenes and the camera's rotating around them as they're falling, you can hear the sound move around you. And, you know,
what about the racquetball scene?
Oh, amazing.
It's like being in a racquetball court, right?
It was one of the first times that I've listened to Atmos and said, this is what I expected it to be.
Right.
I mean, they did a great, and again, the visuals were great. It had great HDR, you know, just everything about it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so from a technical standpoint, it's great. And even if you don't like the superhero movie, and even if you don't like the movie, you'll sit back and go, that was a really cool movie to watch.
Right.
In your home theater.
Yes. It's a demo disc. Almost, I would say, from beginning to end. Yeah. When he does his little sonar thing and that the sound comes out and it goes.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And the things that they, and there's some echoes in there that there's one echo in particular. It's towards the beginning of the movie where, and when I say echo, I mean like somebody talking in a room.
Yep.
And the way the echo moves and bounces around your room, I don't think I've ever heard it done that way in my room yet, which that's getting to the point that like Ara is even saying now, like when Ara says all the time on his podcast that on HD guys that he's like, you know, when Atmos first came out, he's like, he wasn't too impressed with it, but now they're the sound designers and engineers are learning how to utilize this better and they're getting more creative. And it really is. It's just and this is one of those mixes that's just so much fun. And there was so much they could do with that. And it really is. It's an amazing disc that I can't wait for people to hear and see. Yeah. It's just, oh.
And I didn't find any gaps. So sometimes you find there's a bit of a gap as sound moves around. And that's where you kind of say, you know, do I need, you know, front wides or whatever? I found that it matrixed and moved from speaker to speaker perfectly. Like it blended.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know that the ins and outs of how Atmos engineers do their sound engineers do it, but whomever did this, they obviously were a fan of Atmos and they knew exactly what they were doing and they knew what they were looking for.
Right.
Because it had a purpose the entire time. Like I didn't think there were any wasted sounds. They didn't do anything.
Nope.
You know, and I found that the surrounds were perfectly balanced. So sometimes I find the surrounds are a bit hot. So you know, like I found with Endgame, when you first started, the birds were whistling overhead and they were just a bit loud. You know, and I thought, okay, that's a bit hot. But with this one, everything just was like from start to finish, everything was in balance. It all sounded right. And, you know, granted, I was watching it alone, sitting completely in my sweet spot.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's where all my DRAC measurements were from. So I had the best seat. But even when I watched it the second time and I moved to the, you know, just to the left, it was still great. I didn't mind being, you know, a little bit closer to my surrounds.
Yeah. It's the one in particular where I thought you might have thought that the surrounds were a little hot, but I thought it was 100% accurate to the environment. And I mentioned it. I think I mentioned it on a podcast. I might've been talking to somebody like off air and I didn't want to spoil anything, but it's not a spoiler. But Jared Leto's walking down the sidewalk of New York in the crowd and with another character and they're having a conversation. You can hear them perfectly. Like
you can
beyond perfectly, but your surrounds, everything around you, to the point that I was trying to focus on the other noises, like the other conversations going on, and you can't because they've already taken that away from you, but it still feels like you're on the streets of New York and your brain is telling you just to focus on those two characters that are in the middle of the screen, but they're kind of at a distance, right? But you know what I'm talking, but it's an amazing mix of surround sound that you're like, I want to hear that conversation over there because I can hear it almost clearly, but I can't because they've taken the focus and put. It's amazing. I can't describe it until you've heard it, but I think you know what I mean, right?
Even the traffic sounds were perfect because you could you could hear them go and you could hear them in the distance going. So it sounded as if you were walking with them.
Right. And
you know what? I did notice, now that you brought it up, it had incredibly clear dialogue. I find sometimes dialogue clarity, and I have a big old center speaker, so it's not anything to do with my center speaker.
Right.
I find dialogue clarity is always something you struggle with a little bit in home theater, but these ones were absolutely perfect. One of the best, like I said, I'm super impressed with how well mixed that entire soundtrack was.
Yeah. And when you hear the crispness, and I love using that word, the crispness of somebody's conversation in a movie, in a track, that you're like, that is crisp dialogue. And when you can hear that, you know what I mean? That it, like, everything's punctuated perfectly. And you're like watching it in your room and you're like, you can almost feel the words, right? Yep. Like it's just so perfectly done that you're like, oh, and that comes from us watching. Like you said, like, you know, it's not your speaker, right? You know, it's like if you're watching something and it's just not 100% clear, it's the mix. It's the, it's not your system, because you know you've heard it in other movies where you're like, that's how it should sound. Like, look, wow, look how good that is. Going to Tenet, that people, oh my God, the dialogue. I honestly feel like no one's doing that on purpose. Like,
he does. He admits that. He mixes his stuff to, and he calls it audio chaos.
Yeah.
So he boosts surrounds and music. And, you know, the perfect example is Interstellar. When when the scene where the starship is spinning and he's trying to match the spin with the space station, you can still hear Matthew McConaughey speaking, but the audio is so chaotic and the music is so loud and the surrounds are so hot that you just lose the vocals, and he wants that. And I think he's the one, he won't use Atmos. He will only use 5.1.
Right.
And he reluctantly uses surrounds. He's very much a purist, but he refuses to add Atmos to his mixes.
Yeah. And I love that, because you can get the same result with both of them. It's just, I think one of the reasons that he doesn't want to go to Atmos is because he's so old school and he likes, like you were saying, like not 100% sure. And I'm not 100% sure on how Atmos works, but I know from just simplify everything down to, like, you're doing a two channel mix, right? And I've done enough two channel mixes that when I, like, if I wanted to move something across the front of my car, like you're making a tape and you're making a CD or something, and I want to sound like now I'm over here on this side of the car, and then I can walk myself across the front of the car, right? Just by mixing the left and the right appropriately, exactly. And your voice will move. Atmos is the same way, only instead of balancing out those two speakers, or even a 5.1, what they're doing in a 5.1 system, what Nolan's doing, is he's utilizing those speakers in the room, and you have to manually adjust in the mixing room how, okay, I want this sound to move from here to here, so I have to bring this one up and bring this one up a little bit more, but then bring this down at the same time. You have to manually do all of that stuff, right? For a rudimentary version, what I'm saying. Atmos? No, you're just in a box in the cursor, and I say, I want this sound and this track to be right here. And then the system does it. The Atmos system does it. Then on our side, our receivers have Atmos decoding, and it takes and says, I need to, in that box that I was in, that in the mixing room, I need to put that sound here, and it takes whatever speakers are available, and it'll utilize those speakers to put that sound there. So if you have a 5.1 system, it'll utilize it in that way. But if you add up, and that's why it says as many speakers, it's like the idea of it was supposed to go as high as you want. But then if, say, you got a Trinov with 24 speakers or 16 speakers, it'll use those speakers to pinpoint where that sound is. You see what I mean? So, like,
exactly.
The guy in that room, the sound designer, his job is actually a little bit easier, because all he's doing is he's moving that sound. And there's some great Dolby YouTube video of the Batman where they showed how, what's interesting is they do that for each track, like your dialogue track. Okay, where do we want this sound to sound like it's coming from? And they'll pinpoint, where do we want the horn section to sound like it's coming from? Where do we want this sound? And I mean, you think of all those tracks, it's crazy. But I think that's why Nolan likes what he likes the process that he has to go through. And you can still achieve the same thing.
I agree. I was stretching as well.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, I need a sip. But yeah, I should end on a question there. See, I'm not a good interviewer, Andrew. Yeah. I'm just having a conversation. But let's get to Obi-Wan.
Okay.
Just the home theater part. I think it looks fantastic. I think it's got some of the best HDR. That I think it's better than Mandalorian. I think it's better than Boba Fett. I thought Mandalorian is still a little bit grayed out to my liking. Right? But Obi-Wan, sharp. Really, really deep black, some nice brights. It's like, it looks really sharp, and the sound the same. I'm very impressed with what they've done here.
Well, I think that they've taken any of the feedback that they've gotten from the last two series, and I think they put it forward, because I agree. I found that, you know, Mandalorian and Boba Fett were muted as far as the colors go. Like, I mean, I remember watching the very first season of Mandalorian and thinking, this reminds me of Game of Thrones because it's so dark. Mm. And, you know, you want to reach for your brightness control and say, well, I want to turn this up, but I don't want to wash out everything else. Where
right.
Obi-Wan is really, you're right, it's really sharp, it's really crisp, it's really bright. And it is on, obviously, Tatooine. That's not really a spoiler, and we're going to end up spoiling this anyway. So, you know,
yeah,
it's
we'll on get Tatooine. To that in a bit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously, it's going to be bright because it's, you know, it's the sand, it's the sun, it's, you know,
right.
dual suns. So I think they did a really great job of the whole thing. I think it looked, you know, phenomenal, and it sounded amazing. Again, took a lot of care in how they mapped the sound. I thought it was really crisp. Everything about it was just, you know, really good.
Yeah. For instance, one particular scene, no spoiler, but, you know, Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor is standing in a cave having a conversation with another character. We won't give it away. But the light coming into the cave is on, like, Ewan McGregor's face. He is so bright, so well lit, to the point that when you looked into his eyes, you could see the pupil of his eyes constricted, right? It was just like these little tiny black circles in his eyes, and that black was so black. But then also, looking at how the cave gets deeper behind him and there's like crevices, the detail in there, the blackness of the shadows behind him were really nice. Yeah. And in the contrast between the darkness behind Ewan McGregor and then the brightness on his face, like, it's literally like when they lit this, he must have been sitting there going, wow, that is hot. Like the lights that are on him, right? But then when the camera shifts to the person he's talking to, the lights behind them, but they're not washed out. There's still great detail in them. And I think that's what HDR is about. And I feel like in, like you said, in Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, I felt like you didn't get that as much.
I agree.
It was,
I definitely agree. And just everything about it just seemed better. Like when we get into some of the characters, like some of the close-ups of the character, they paid a lot of attention to the small details and, like just some of the, one of the characters, like, you know, the Feline,
the
Faline or Feline, do you read any of the other books?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay. Well, at one point there was, Prince Shizor, who was a Feline,
okay.
And he's sort of reptilian. Right.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that was a Feline, and okay. the detail on that makeup for
yeah.
her and the scales and everything about her, how she was lit and how the light bounced off.
Yeah.
Whoever, if that was CGI, they did an amazing job. If that was makeup and prosthetics, they did an even more amazing job because that was perfect.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing, is I don't know the depth of the stories from reading that you and my buddy John know and other people I've talked to. I'm more of like, I've read the movies. I've read a fair amount of comics on it. So I have a little bit of more of a working knowledge than just the movies. But I know, I mean, you know, that's why it's great to talk to people like you. It's like, oh, there's so much more here. And it's, well, and I know there's so many more Easter eggs in here that yeah. even I missed, but I got a few of them, but.
Well, I think, like before, when they were doing the callbacks in the other movies, they were doing callbacks to invoke a sense of nostalgia. So, you know, when we saw, you know, the doctor and Pontebauma from the cantina scene in Rogue One, you know, and he said, you know, don't you know I'm wanted on, you know, da da da.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a straight callback. That was
right.
pure nostalgia, because they were saying, look, this is the story. We're linking it directly to this. I find with with this one, and again, we're only two episodes in, they're doing some linking and some call-outs, but they're in such a subtle way that they look normal.
Right.
Right? So you're not being drawn, obviously, like, I'm like, oh, that's Prince Zior's, Shizor's race.
Yep.
Again, unless you were deep into the lore, you won't really notice it. But I thought that was a cool, hey, they're using a different type of character. They're not just using the same, you know, set of characters, you know, every single time.
Right. I think what they're doing is, it's fantastic, honestly. But it's also, this is where it gets into, like, it's mirroring the MCU. And they're pulling stories from these books and instances and making them into a completely new story, which is what I really like about, like, what they've done in the MCU is they're pulling all, they have all this, you know, 60 plus years of comics, and they can pull from all these different stories and create a completely new story so that people that know the comics really well can still go to the movies and be surprised, but at the same time be like, wow, I should have seen that coming, because in 1972 they wrote this, you know. Exactly. What I mean? And they're doing that with Star Wars now, and it's for people like yourself. Like, they're paying homage to people like yourself that I know the books, I know these characters, but even though I didn't necessarily know it, I'm still enjoying the ride and the story as it goes. But then it creates conversation for guys like you and I to sit here and be like, hey, this is what you missed here. And, oh, this is really cool. So there's so much there that who knows where this story is going. But at the end of it, somebody like yourself will be able to say, I should have seen that coming, because yep, this happened here in this book and this happened in this book, but they put it together in a different way. So it's entertaining to everybody and still all part of the lore.
Yep.
Right.
I agree. Well, there's something for everybody. Like, you know, yeah, if I feel that, you know, if you knew just a little bit about Star Wars, you could watch this and say, I like this. And I mean, everybody, almost everybody knows Obi-Wan. I mean, he's one of the central characters. So it's, and I mean, we already know his story arc. We know how it ends. But we don't know how he got to there. Right. We don't know any of that stuff. And you're starting to see a different Obi-Wan, and you're starting to get some of his mentality of, you know, what happened to him after he saw Anakin fall, and, you know, up to where we are now. And it's really cool to see how he has, especially Ewan McGregor. He is a great actor.
Oh.
So it's going to be really impressive to see how he does that arc, because, you know, pretty much the last time we saw Obi-Wan, he was leaving his best friend, his brother, to die.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next time we kind of saw it, he was, you know, with Luke and going
being
to save
killed
the princess,
by him
pretty much. Right. And so we don't know any of that story as to what happened. You know, was he completely left alone for those 10 years or whatever it was, or, you know, what was going on. And I think they're filling in a lot of that stuff, because, again, we end it with, you know, with Revenge of the Sith, and we move forward. You know, there's nothing there. And I mean, there's a lot of story that could be told, and, you know, what happened as Vader rose to power and, you know, was exterminating the rest of the Jedi. What does that look like? And I know that they've done some comic books or some video games, but, you know, there's so much there that they could do.
Oh, there's so much. All right. Here's one that it's not spoilers to this show at all, but it's something that we've all speculated on. That line when Vader and Obi-Wan meet on the Death Star in A New Hope, and he says, when we last met, I was a student and you were the master, right? Yeah. Something along those lines. And then Vader saying, but now I'm the master.
Yeah.
We all assume that was episode three was the last time they met. Speculation in this series, does that mean that they don't meet, or does that mean that they could potentially meet in this series and you know what I mean? And then maybe they still recognize each other as student and master at the time.
Yeah.
Like who knows, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they do meet in this series. And then you're like, but at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if this whole series goes and neither of them face each other. You know, like the story goes on while they're both like one's looking, one's avoiding, or vice versa. And you don't know, but it's, I don't think it would be bad either way. What do you think on that? Having read the books?
Well, I see, and a lot of the books didn't really speak to, so in most of the books that dealt with Vader, Obi-Wan wasn't part of it. He was, you know, again, Obi-Wan was hiding on Tatooine, keeping a low profile, and nobody was really knew where he was. And, you know, so everything that focused on Vader was about, you know, what he was doing in the meantime to exterminate Jedi and some of those stories. So my gut tells me that they're going to meet somehow, because it just, I just can't see them, you know, bringing back Hayden Christensen and Obi-Wan and not having that conflict, because that just seems like the inevitable end of this. And you're right. I'm sort of, and I didn't think of it until you said that, because the line was, you know, last time we met. So are they going to retcon that? I'm sure that, you know, obviously with the writers and Filoni and Favreau involved, they're going to, if they have to retcon that, they're going to do it in the most believable way possible.
Right.
But from the way that line went, you assume that they were completely didn't talk for, or didn't see each other for 10 years that, you know, basically, hey, I'm here, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I strongly think that they're going to meet. I think the outrage, if they didn't meet, I think a lot of nerds would nerds unite and storm, you know, Skywalker Ranch.
Exactly. Well, they could, I mean, when they meet, if they meet in this series, I mean, it's just simple line. Like all he has to do is call him master.
Yep.
Right. All he would say, all you would have to do is have Vader see Obi-Wan and say, yep, master, whatever he said, they have a conversation, but he refers to him as the master. But now maybe because of his trainings with, you know, the Emperor and everything, now he feels like he's the master, and that's why he says it in A New Hope. So who knows? I mean, there's nothing saying, and right now it's, you know, it, everybody know the storyline for this, it's supposed to be 10 years after, even, yep, you know, so it's kind of right in the middle. They might never meet again until A New Hope. So yep, who knows, but we'll see. I'm kind of fine either way, but I do agree with you that if they don't, I bet you there would be a lot of upset people.
Yeah.
But when they do meet, I bet you there's a lot of people that go, but he said, oh, yeah, last time we met. Oh. So you can see it all go.
You can't please us Star Wars nerds, no matter what you do.
Well, yeah. No matter what, as long as you do something, you'll both make us happy and angry at the same time.
And the problem is that there is so much canon out there that is actually in canon, that they actually have somebody that is the master of Star Wars lore. His name is Pablo Hidalgo, and his job is to, and the only reason I know this, cause I listen to a lot of Star Wars podcasts, and mm-hmm, he's from Canada actually.
Okay.
And what he does is he goes through when they're making shows and they're like, okay, you can't say that, or you can't do this because it conflicts with this. So his entire job is making sure that the canon lines up pretty well.
Okay. That's cool. Is that how they came up with like Rogue One? Like retconning, yeah, that, like basically, yeah, trying to come up with a plausible storyline for what happened. And exactly, like how is the Death Star, you know, end up with that kind of a fault to it?
Exactly. Right? And that's exactly what they did, is they, you know, they, we knew there was a fault, so they just walked it back, and made sure that nothing else in canon, you know, conflicted with that fault. So, and that, I mean, that was smart for Disney to do, was to say, you know, none of this stuff is canon anymore, because it gave them a blank slate to say, okay,
right,
here's how we're doing this. Because in the books, it talked about how it was an oversight and et cetera, et cetera. You know, and, oh, sorry, my phone just buzzed. So, yeah. So, you know, they had a lot of insight into how it happened. And now it was, you know, Galen Erso built it in to, you know, basically put a vulnerability in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Have you seen Top Gun Maverick yet?
I have not.
Oh, so. Okay. It's not really a spoiler to the movie. We all know it's planes fighting, blah, blah, blah. I can't wait for you to see this, and I can't wait for all Star Wars fans to see Top Gun Maverick. There is a huge nod to Star Wars.
Oh, awesome.
It I is a huge... I just want to say the entire basis of the movie is a huge nod to Star Wars. You'll Amazing. Know what I'm talking about when they when you watch it and you see it. And then there's all the there's lines in it that you're going to go, there were times like me and my son are just like, you know, you're in a big loud movie theater, right? But then they say something, you don't say anything. You just turn your heads like right away and look at each other like, I can't believe they just did that. That's what we were doing.
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward. Like this is one, I mean, I love Top Gun. It was one of the reasons I got into home theater.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. And I heard it, didn't it get like a perfect score on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. It's people are loving it because I can totally, and I said this to my wife hasn't seen it yet. I want her to only cause I just want to go again and have somebody go with me. But, but it's, I can totally see people being like, especially younger people being like, that was just cheesy. And I'm going to be like,
Yep.
And I loved every second of it. Every second of it. And I was talking to Ara and Braden last night, and I texted Ara and I was like, you got to see this on the big screen. And I was like, it's because he said he was just going to wait to see it at home. And I'm like, it deserves to be seen on the big screen.
It's too much to see. Like it really deserves an IMAX or a big old screen. You know, it's just what it was, right?
Yeah. You don't need to see it in IMAX. If you can get to one, get to one, if you have that capability, but definitely don't, if you love Top Gun, if you love Star Wars, if you love going to the movies, this is the reason you go back to the movies because it just really deserves to be seen on the big screen. It's, I hope they do it for all of them, but I was there like opening day, Thursday at 3 o'clock. Is when I saw it. So like the first possible in my area for the public anyways. And they have a little opening at the beginning where Tom Cruise comes and he just comes on the screen and thanks you for coming out to the theater because, well, for all intents and purposes, they could have released this on Paramount Plus a year ago. They could, but he refused. He's like, this needs to be seen on the big screen. Right. And what's cool is it's like, he's there, but he's not Maverick. He's Tom Cruise. He's got longer hair. He doesn't have the hair that he has in the movie. Right. So it's way after the movie, but I thought that was a cool touch. And one of the things that he says is he goes, this is real. He goes, those are real G's. Those are real. We're pushing it. And it's like he also thanked the actors that all did this too, but there's this one scene that we've seen in the trailers, but when you see it for real integrated into this movie and he's literally just like being slammed against the cockpit, against the canopy. And he's like, cause they're pulling those G's and making those turns and you're like, holy crap. And you see their faces cause they did these G's. Now I'm sure the G's that they're facing in real life are probably like one or two. In the movie, they exaggerate it, and it's like, you know, for effect. But these actors are not pilots. They're not. So whatever they're pulling here, and it's just amazing to see. And to see him bounce back and forth inside that cockpit, you're just like, it's just awesome. And, like, you want to just stand up and go, yeah, in the theater, like, because it's so cool to see.
Well, from what I understand, that a lot of those stunts, they were pulling some significant G's.
Yeah.
So impressive that they, cause if I understand correctly, they're double seated F-18s and they just positioned the camera in which way that you couldn't see the pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
it looks like he's the one flying it, but
So basically I think they did do, cause I think they were saying that some of those scenes, they were pulling some decent, like that's not makeup and that's not CGI. That's their face contorting. So,
right.
That is the ultimate in realistic filmmaking, you know, not, and I wanted to say, or what was it? It was something ridiculous per minute that they were paying for those planes because of amount of fuel and the cost of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's crazy. Like, I work for USA Hockey in here in Massachusetts, and this is just a stupid little segue, but the money that goes into things like this. So we run like a mini one-on-one here for the kids where we film it, and then it plays in between periods on the Bruins games. But you go into the garden and you film it in the garden, right? The garden donates the garden and the lights and everything. For that event, and we run it, it probably takes us 4 hours, right? $10,000 in electricity.
Wow. Wow.
You know what I mean? And you're like, the Bruins donate it. By just them flipping on the lights for us to be there, it's probably more, it's probably like 6 hours we're actually there with all the lights on, right? So it's lit like you're at a game. So that all the lights are on in the building and everything, but it's 10 grand. Wow. And they donate, you know, they just, that's their electric bill, whatever. But if they don't turn the lights on, they save 10 grand. And it's yeah. That's a lot to us, but when you're running a multi-million dollar, if not billion dollar enterprise like that, it's, you know, but yeah, I know what you're saying. It's like the money that goes into this and for them to do that. And it's like, it's also good for that. It's also publicity for the Navy, even the Air Force. And it's like, it's, this is going to take generation of kids and be like, I want to be a pilot. Right.
that's what the Air Force said. They said after, or the Navy, they said after Top Gun, enrollment into the Naval Academy and into being a fighter pilot just went through the roof because everybody wanted to be a pilot.
Right.
And every time they do something like this, obviously people get enamored with and say, I want to do that, not realizing that only a small percentage of people actually have what it takes to be a Top Gun pilot.
Right. Right. But that's the idea. We do that in hockey. The reason that we're looking at USA Hockey, and I'm sure you're doing it at Canada Hockey, right? Yeah. But the reason you just want to pull, you want to get every possible athlete you can get. Yeah. Because the more athletes you get, the more you have to choose from so that you just have a higher crop at the end.
Exactly.
And it's just common sense. And it's I can't wait for more people to see this movie and be able to talk about it more because... It's like I went on I go on my Kaleidoscape app all the time and I'm always looking for pre-orders just on like what's coming out next. And I went on yesterday and like literally that was Friday. Okay, yesterday as I'm talking right now, yesterday was Friday. The movie is that's the day it's supposed to be out. And I'm on my Kaleidoscape app and it said pre-order and I click on it and it said no. What? What do you mean no? It's only available at the time. It went from a red button to a gray button, and it told me no. And it's like, it's only available it's not available in your area yet. I'm like, but it was just a pre-order. I was just so early on it. their software hadn't caught up yet. 5 minutes later, I looked, and it was there, and I was like, buy it. It's not going anywhere. It's a damn pre-order. Like my buddy John laughs at me all the time. He goes, good thing you got it early. You don't want him to run out. No,
exactly.
But it's just the point. It's you're so excited about it that you're like, and you would think that they would have jacked the price up and they didn't. It was the normal price. It was $24.99 to buy it. And I just know now I just have to wait. I don't get it any earlier than when it drops, you know, it's just, but I just know that when it does, it's just automatically going to be there. But it's so exciting and that's part of home theater though, isn't it?
It is.
So much fun. But anyways, let's get back to Obi-Wan. What we were talking about, the home theater environment. We talked about the picture, how great it is. The sound, any huge notes of sound, no pun intended, that you wanted to mention?
But you know what? I think just the entire thing, was really well done. Like there was nothing that stood out as being too loud or too soft or, you know, not mixed well. And I think that's when you really have achieved it, when it just is something you're like, okay, that's amazing. That's awesome. You know, right. It's great.
Yeah. And I don't, there's nothing. I can't think of anything that I'd be like, ooh, couple of boxes of popcorn for that. They didn't do anything out of the ordinary, but what they did is they executed it really well. The dialogue is fantastic. You can understand everything perfectly. You're actually like you're enthralled. You're paying attention. Yep. There's some great pans. You've got ships going by. You got some battle scenes, some lasers going off, stuff like that. that I thought were really nice. Well done. I do have one. That I would probably give it a box of popcorn. And it can be spoiler free, but a ship goes by over your head. It's very early on, but you're actually looking down at the camera's looking at the ground. So you see the shadow of the ship. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And it pans from the left overhead to the right side, all overhead, but it is dead on. Am I wrong?
No, they did a great job there. And all the little, and you know, again, without spoiling too much, Leia's little droid that chittered around.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. I can't remember its name.
Yeah.
I don't remember its name, but you know what? With that, since you mentioned that, let's get the popcorn popping here. All right, you hear it? All right.
Yep.
We'll get the popcorn popping because we're going to get into spoilers. We're going to talk episode, just to be clear for everybody, this is only episodes 1 and 2. That's all that's been out of the new Obi-Wan series. So people listening in the future, if they're listening in a year away from now, would be like, oh, don't worry about it. We're only talking the first two. But yeah, we'll go with that. And all right, now that we're into spoilers, that let's lead off with that Leia part.
Yep. Let's start at the beginning. So I thought I thought the recap they did of the entire prequel was phenomenal.
Yes. Did you think it looked better too?
It. So I was going to say that whatever they did to it, it looked amazing. And I mean, obviously they were choosing very select scenes to tell a story to sort of, and it very heavily focused on you know, Vader and Obi-Wan, and it ended with Anakin on Mustafar being burnt.
Yeah.
But it looked amazing. It sounded amazing, and everything was just. I thought they grabbed the right scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought it looked amazing. And, you know, even the very beginning scene where you see the Order 66 being executed and you see, you know, the stormtroopers coming in and they were, you know, killing at the Jedi Temple and going all through that. And then it sort of came, you know, 10 years, you know, later.
Yes.
And you meet up with Obi-Wan and you kind of see where he is now. And, you know, you see that whatever beast is on its side and they're cutting it up and all that stuff and just amazing. Like everything's just awesome about that first little bit, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So much to the point that like when I watched it by myself, like I was like, this looks phenomenal. And now if I hadn't just rewatched all three of the prequel movies, I would have been like, now I hadn't watched the prequel movies in a long time. Obviously since I the last time I watched them was when the box set came out, the 4K Skywalker Saga came out. At the time I didn't have my Lumigen, right? So I wasn't getting as good of an image as I'm getting now. So when I started rewatching the series, the prequels, I was like, wow, these look fantastic. They look so much better than I even remembered. So I'm like, but at the same time, like we talked about earlier, we're like, it looks like watching a video game. It's not as good as, because I actually bounced out and went to some of the older or the newer movies and went, holy crap, those look really good too, but they look so much better because like we talked about earlier, right? Now, fast forward to, let's get back to Obi-Wan. You have that opening and I was like, if I hadn't just watched them, I would have thought the same thing. I would have thought it was the Lumigen. Just, that's why they're going to look better. No, they just flat. I think they wanted it to match the series.
Yep.
So I think they adjusted, maybe they increased the contrast a little bit, just a little bit, which is going to, it's going to bring out that color a little bit more. Like your black levels maybe just went, they punched those down a little. So your black levels were just a hair deeper, but that's also going to bring up the brightness. I don't know what they did, but doesn't it feel, it felt crisper.
It did.
And then on top of that, when my son watched it with me, I said the same, doesn't it look better? He goes, yeah, it looks so great. But at the same time, when it ended, my son goes, they didn't even have to make the three movies because they showed us that.
Pretty much.
Because to your point, they nailed the story.
Yep.
And
they had everything and they got the poignant pieces. to tell the story, you know, from, you know, pod racing to Clone Wars to Padme and Anakin to those Qui-Gon, guys fighting. Yep. The Mace. Whole, everything. Yep.
So that's one of the things I wanted to ask you is all the people, I have a feeling that all of that was calculated and all of the characters that got special note in that opening, are we going to see all of them? Meaning, obviously, I think we're going to see Yoda. I think Qui-Gon, clearly, right?
Well, but they said that. The point was made that he was sending him to Tatooine so he could actually talk, so he could learn to talk to Qui-Gon. So I definitely think you're going to see something with Qui-Gon there. I don't know what it's going to be, and I don't know how much of it's going to actually play into it, but I can't. They teased it. Like, why would they choose, of all the scenes, why would they choose that one?
Right. Well, and we all thought that just after seeing the, you know, episode 3, knowing we're getting an Obi-Wan series, we're like, well, you got to have Liam Neeson. He's got to come back, right? But here's the two that I think could show up. And I had a discussion with my son about the second one, but the first one I'll tell you is Mace Windu. Does he make an appearance? Because you brought back Darth Maul.
Yep.
So it should be possible for Mace to survive what he went through. So do we get a surprise there? I think that's possible because they referenced him in the opening.
Yep.
And then the second one, is Padme still alive?
No, I think she's dead. I think that they use that. So I think they use that reference because you heard him, you know, when he was talking to Leia, at one point he said, "You remind me of somebody I knew. You're just like her," when, you know, he was talking about her being, you know, all, you know, smart and whatnot.
Right. But it doesn't mean that she's not alive. He might not know it, but all we know is that the robots, when she died, was saying that she was fading. How do we know they didn't do a similar to what they did to, you know,
Fennec Shand.
Yeah. Or what they did with her, Padme, in Phantom Menace. They were constantly switching her out, right? And then they open this up with Leia, the first time we meet Leia, the old switcheroo.
Yep.
So are they foreshadowing the fact that... Now, the reason I ask this is me and my buddy John have been speculating this for a while, because in the comics, there was an issue of the comics within the last 2 or 3 years where potentially she was coming back. And she talked, Vader ran into her, but it wasn't her. It was somebody else that looks just like her. But they teased the crap out of it, because at the end of one comic, we were like, oh my God, Padme's alive. So that just sparked that. And to the point that even Vader, Anakin, was like, Padme? And we're like, oh, no. And then the next book you find out, no, it was one of her maidens or whatever that was supposed to be like a, not a clone of her. But so I don't know. My son doesn't even like the idea. He's like, I don't even know where that story would go. What? Because then if she does come back, where would she be later on? So she's just going to come back to die again?
Yeah. And I guess the problem is there's so much in that story now that would just kind of convolute it. So, I mean,
yeah,
I honestly thought that Mace might have come back in Book of Boba Fett, because of obviously the tie between Jango and Mace and how that would have worked out. But again, they didn't have enough. I don't think they had enough episodes. And right now with the story arc of the Grand Inquisitor and the rest of the, you know, Second Sisters and the First Sisters and all that stuff, I don't know where that's going. So, I mean, obviously, I think the arc of this is with the Inquisitors and the fact that one particular Inquisitor wants to get Obi-Wan. She's been hunting Obi-Wan for 10 years and they can't find him. And she continually is searching for him. And I think the obvious reason is because she wants to get the favor of Vader because of, you know.
Right.
And so, I guess to start with that, I really like what they're doing with the Inquisitors and how they introduce them early in and how they sort of gave that speech about how he said that, you know, Jedi hunt themselves because they can't give up what it is that they are. They always have to help. They're always, you know, they live by their code. And, you know, very early in, you know, he basically threatens somebody, and the Jedi instinctively stops the knife from killing this guy, and he reveals himself, and then, you know, that's sort of how it starts, right?
Right.
And then you sort of move to Obi-Wan, who, you know, without getting into that whole interplay, but basically he, you know, he basically says, you know, I'm not Obi-Wan anymore. I'm Ben.
Right? Right. Yeah. Which we knew from the A New Hope. That's what.
Yep.
You think he means Ben? Yeah. Ben Kenobi. It's like, and is that really that far of a stretch for people to be like, that's how you disguise yourself? Your last name is still the same. You just went from Obi-Wan to Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that tricked everybody.
Exactly. And, you know, but he said, you know, I'm not a Jedi anymore. And he said, you know, don't, you know, you stop doing that. Like, the Jedi are gone. It's over. We lost.
Right.
And it's very grim. And you could tell, like, I think Ewan McGregor did a great job basically saying, and he obviously takes the loss of the Jedi very hard because he feels like he played a part in that. Because you can tell he's carrying an awful lot of guilt. The way he said, you know, we've lost, we're done, we're over. And, you know, basically telling this other Jedi, that's not us. We don't help anybody. We just need to survive. Just forget who you are and just survive.
Right. And because I think he knows the future. I think he has an idea on, he already, that's part of like the Jedi, be mindful of the future. Like, they can still see a little bit of it, but it's still in play. It's still, destiny isn't decided, but you can kind of see ahead on the roadmap. Right. I think that was the idea, like Yoda was saying. So in his teachings with Qui-Gon, and I'm sure he's probably been in contact with Yoda at some point. Maybe we'll see it in the series, but I mean, he must know the idea of Luke becoming who he is, obviously. Speaking of which, what do you think of that little nod to the little toy that he bought him?
That was phenomenal.
Isn't it?
So, and what I really like about that entire scene is the way they brought the callback. So we see the Skyhopper. Here's my nerd. Yeah. It's a T-16 Skyhopper.
Even know the name of it. I just said spaceship.
But they bring that back. So we eventually do see Luke playing with that, or one very similar to it. I think it is. Yeah.
And that's when he was talking to C-3PO and R2.
Yep.
Right.
You know, and what I really enjoyed was the way that the Jawa was making fun of me. He said, I could smell you. He goes, did you bring some soap? Cause I could smell you from Anchorhead. And he was making fun of him.
Right. Right.
And that whole interplay, because the Jawas were always really just, they didn't really do a lot. They were there. They were scavengers. And I find that you can see his friendship with his Jawa, especially when he's like, you know, is there anything else you need? And he's like, well, I need a circuit board off of my,
stolen. Blah, blah,
blah. It got stolen. And the guy's like, oh, just look at this. And he goes, you know, if you're going to sell it back to me, at least clean it up first.
Yeah. And that costs extra.
Yeah. And I thought that was great. I thought that their friendship, you can tell that they're friends. You can tell that, you know, he's, you know, settled into his role in Tatooine, and he's, you know, he understands the Jawas and, you know, all that sort of, that's the nature of them and all that stuff. And I just thought it brought a little bit of humor into a very, you know, tense scene. And, you know, he's completely laying low, you know, he's a fish cutter, right? He works at a fish market, right?
That looked delicious, by the way.
It did. That was the biggest space salmon I've ever seen.
Same thing. My son's like, wow, that looks good.
But you got to think, like, someone was saying that they thought that was a crate dragon, but it didn't look like a crate dragon. It looked like a fish on its side, like a big whale on its side.
Yeah, giant whale.
Yeah. I thought, and that was when I really noticed the vibrancy, because the color in the fish meat was really vibrant.
Yeah, it was more, it wasn't fish meat. It felt more like a beef, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was red, but then you had the nice, like, the veins of fat in through it that were like, it did. It looked delicious. Like the most, like, thickest piece of prime rib you could imagine, right?
Yep.
And then let's get into the home theater sound too. Yep. Because when he cut off that slice for his little camel, you probably know what's the camel called. Do you know the
species?
There you go. See? Oh, man. But anyways, so yeah, when he cut that off, my mouth's watering talking about it. Yeah. You could hear how tender it was, right? And then he rolls it up and puts it in his... Did you feel like I did, like he was going to get caught? Like every time he did it, you're like, all right, here's when he gets caught. All right, here's when he gets caught.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get caught, but then the other thing that really, and this is weird, it just, the reverence in which he packed it, like he was so precise and he packed it, and it, you know, it was for his Eope, and, you know, basically he fed it to him, and he just showed so much care for this, you know, essentially space
all camel. All life. Yeah, he had compassion for all life. That's the idea of the Force, right? Yep. It's like, it's all life is symbiotic. It's like, so he's like, I take care of him. He take care of me. I'm going to bring him this delicious meat. I want him to bring me a piece.
Yep.
Let me ask you this. This is kind of like an undertone thing. Do you think he's being funded by Leia's parents? And that he's doing that job just so that people realize he gets money? That he can have money?
Well, I think that the Jedi don't need anything. So I think that he doesn't need anything. I think he wants for nothing because he doesn't have anything. He doesn't want anything. So, you know, he's very, very frugal. He doesn't do much. He doesn't bring anything to his, you know, he doesn't need anything. Like the Jedi swore off all possessions and everything. So for him, he doesn't need anything but his cave or whatever, you know. And again, eventually at some point he had a hut, so he obviously moved up. And I think he's kept that. And it was kind of weird because you would think that if he didn't want to be found, he would have gotten rid of anything that could have been traced back to him.
Right. And he did still have stuff in his cave that could be traced. Right. But yeah, clearly he buried the lightsabers.
Yeah.
Right. So guess he doesn't have anything in his cave that would lead back to necessarily being a Jedi.
Yeah.
Because the communicator was the same as Senator, what's his name?
Organa.
I was trying to think of his first name. Bail? Bail?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and obviously
he has his number because Bail called.
Yeah. Him. Isn't that funny? Like, hey, all right, I'm going to be over here. Here's my cell number. Give me a call if you need anything. I thought that the first time I saw that, I thought that was on delay, like one of those where they just send the message out and it's like a voicemail, but then he started talking to him and I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Let's rewind a bit. So then we get back to Leia as a child, and that first scene you said where, you know, basically, you know, the mother comes in to get her to go to the thing. And it turns out that Leia's, you know, off, you know, playing hooky and in the woods playing. I thought that she did a really great job. My wife really liked that little actress, said she, you know, was great. You know, she, you know, just brought such whimsy to Leia and such mischievousness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I said to my son the same thing. I think that little girl does a fantastic job playing the role of that precocious 10-year-old. And even to the point that, what was the scene? Oh, when her cousin talks down to her.
Yep.
And the lip quiver, her bottom lip actually like moves a little bit in like you would when you're getting like upset and angry, but sad. And it was like not a word spoken by that little girl, but you could see on her face. And that lip quiver to me was just like, holy crap, this little girl's nailing it. And like, she just knows it. So she's, she's so smart too.
Yep.
They wrote her that way.
You could tell the comment stung, but then she composed herself really quickly and she was like, you're not going to get me. And she had the ultimate comeback. And then she was, you know, she was like, I'm not going to apologize. And, you know, Bail came out and, you know, did the whole, you know, fatherly thing and sort of said, and you still have to apologize.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
He pretty much, he told her, you're absolutely right. You did everything right. You know, eventually you're going to be his boss and you're going to tell him what to do. But right now you have to go apologize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's so funny what I love about that scene, and my kids will know this because I did. That's how my dad raised me. Like, Just take it. You're going to be bullied. Somebody's going to do that stuff to you. Just smile. And my dad, he used to tell me all the time, he's like, just smile. He goes, just be like, okay. And you just walk away and just be like, oh, okay. And he goes, that irritates them even more because they just want to get under your skin. And when you don't, they get even, they try harder to get under your skin. And you just keep smiling. And it's funny. When I started podcasting, I had somebody come at me, gave me some bad reviews and stuff. And when we joined the Nerdy Legion, where we are, where John and I are now in this podcast is, and somebody wanted me to join their network and they came at me and they wrote some bad stuff. And the people in the Nerdy Legion were supporting me and they were going back at it. And I kept telling people, don't just let it go because they're just trying to get under your skin. And if
don't
you just
feed the trolls,
don't feed it, just let it go. And what I ended up doing is I came on and I thanked him. On my podcast, I was like, thank you so much, blah, blah, blah. And I just kept, and he kept trying to get at me and I kept, you know, I just ignored that. And I would thank him publicly for everything he did. And it'd be like, hey, he's upset. I get it. But you know what? If you feed into it, that just helps them because they're just getting, and that's what she did. She got back at him, but now he knows he got under her skin. And that's what, you know, Bale's trying to teach her, like, just let it go. You're going to be his boss someday anyways. Don't worry about it. And I thought that was a really cool scene. And it really plays into how we see Leia later, how smart she is all the way through the rest of the next six movies, really.
Yep.
And what I wanted to say is obviously they opened up with the switcheroo of Leia, right? Yeah. But also, did you see that coming? That Leia was going to be the focus, at least in these first two episodes?
I had no idea. I honestly did not. Like, I mean, I guess I should have expected at some point to see Leia, but everything in the materials or in the teasers only focused on Luke. We saw Luke right away.
Right.
You know, pretending to be a pilot.
It was the shell game. Look over here. And then bam. It's like, and they even showed you in the first episode, you saw that scene. And everything, and you thought that's what it was going to be, protecting Luke, working with Luke, doing this, doing that.
Yeah.
And they even kind of led you down that road. Then we go right into Leia and it's boom. It was, I mean, it started on Tatooine and now we're in who knows where. We can go all over the galaxy now. And I thought they did a fantastic job of, wow, surprising you. Even going into this, Jimmy Smits was one of those, do we get an appearance? Holy crap, he's a regular character. I thought that was a great reveal early on, kind of almost not to the same level as Luke showing up at the end of Mandalorian, but I thought that was, I still think that was a great switcheroo, and how they kept that a secret was, I thought, really cool.
And I wasn't sure, because when Bale did call him and he basically said, no, get somebody else, I'm not helping, I have to be here.
Right.
It really kind of showed how he had changed. And he was like, you know, I don't care. Like, you know, get somebody else, get another bounty hunter, do something else. But I'm not leaving Luke. And, you know, basically he said, you're the only one, you know, that can do this. You're the only one I trust. And, you know, he obviously convinced Obi-Wan to go after those bounty hunters and find Leia.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just really cool how they brought in all of those characters and Leia and, you know, Obi-Wan and, you know, because again, the way that everything was talking about it is, you know, he said, you're one of my father's most trusted generals. Well, it just shows how much he trusted him. He trusted Leia's life with him. But it, the only other thing is that, you know, Leia didn't show any familiarity towards Obi-Wan in the movies, obviously, because this is, you know, right. So she obviously, as a child, knew who Obi-Wan was, and she probably would have been told who he was to rescue her.
Right. But even in her message, I mean, she never met him in the movies far. But even in her message, she sent that message to him, and she's like, Obi-Wan. She knew him as Obi-Wan.
Yep. Yep.
And said, you fought with my father in the Clone Wars. Please, Obi-Wan, you are our only hope. So that would be obviously 10 years after this, right? So isn't that kind of cool how both the origin of like Star Wars, the opening scene for all intents and purposes in 1977 was her asking for help. And here we are in the early stages of the Obi-Wan series, her father asking for his, you're my only hope. And it's kind of in the same way, using that same hologram thing.
Yep.
Right? Only now he's standing there with his wife, and it's kind of like how that they're mirroring each other here.
Yep.
Can we extrapolate anything more out of the rest of the story? Do you think that was just maybe a nod, or do you think that this Obi-Wan series could mirror maybe A New Hope?
I just don't know, because, I mean, obviously, we know that a lot of the series is going to be with the Inquisitors chasing after Obi-Wan, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, it obviously was set up that, and I can't remember her character's name, but basically she, you know, she knew that Obi-Wan would, she obviously knows that Luke and Leia are Vader's kids, because why would she target Leia? Right. She said, I knew this would draw you out. So what is it about the senator's daughter that draw him out?
It has nothing to do. They know that that's the senator's daughter. And they know that Obi-Wan worked well with Senator Organa. And that could have come from Anakin. Anakin could have told her, like, I have a speculation. We'll save it for the end on a story that involves her and Vader, meaning which is the third daughter, whatever you call it. But anyways, that I think, like, now Bail Organa was upset because when she gets taken, he doesn't know if it's to get at Obi-Wan. I don't even think he thinks that. He just thinks, oh, maybe somebody's figured out who she is.
Yeah.
And that's why he's upset. When in reality, she's just his daughter. It could have been like his legit daughter. And we knew, like, hey, I just got to take one of his kids. He's going to reach out to Obi-Wan for help. And that's what they were doing. I don't think there's any speculation whatsoever that they know that's literally Anakin's daughter. I don't think that at all. Not yet. Because he doesn't even know. Not until later. It's not until Empire Strikes Back
out. You are correct. You are correct. So that was just me sort of knowing, but you're right. As soon as I think about it, you're right. Because he said, your sister, you know, and he's like, you know, basically figured it out.
Your feelings give you away. Like, your thoughts or feelings give you away. Like, ooh, sister. You know, as he says it. And which I think that gets back to the opening scene when they have her. And I thought this also going through watching the final scene of episode 3, when they have Padme going down at her funeral, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously she wasn't, she'd already had the babies and then she died. So her stomach wouldn't have been raised. So they did that to make it seem like, okay, the babies went with her. For anybody, any spies that are watching at that funeral, correct? Is that's what I took out of it, especially possibly seeing it again. It's like the idea is, like, you know, all he knew, and the Emperor tells him at the end of 3 that, nope, you killed Padme. All he knows is that he killed Padme.
Yep.
Anakin. So I don't think he thinks he has kids out there, obviously, especially in the series. I don't think he thinks Padme's alive, which we all probably agree that she's not. So I just think it was just chance that it was, you know, Senator Organa's daughter, and that was just to pull Ben out. It is kind of a stretch, though, right? I see why you were thinking what you were thinking, because if it was just any one of his other kids, like, if they never got to have kids, but say they did, why would he call Obi-Wan? I'm sure there are other people.
So obviously he trusts him. He's like, I trust you to get this child back.
For important, right?
Yeah, you're the one I trust.
Right. But then it turns out that obviously we know the full story. And I think that at the end, I think that she could get to know him. That could also be over. that story arc could be over fairly quickly. And they move on to the rest of the story. Like, he gets her home. They're still hunting him.
Yeah.
And do you think he does? You would know this better. This is one of the questions I had for you, is what's the longevity in the timeline of the Inquisitors? Because could he eliminate them by the end of this? And maybe that's why him and Vader never even see each other the rest of the way.
Yeah, so I'm not as up on the Inquisitors, because they're a relatively new creation as part of the Clone Wars and Rebels, and I didn't get into all that stuff. So I do know, and I mean, we can obviously, this is spoiler filled. The Grand Inquisitor does not die, even though he was stabbed by. Reva, her name was.
Yeah.
So he obviously survives, and is part of it. Right, you know, towards the end, at some point, they do get killed off. But so obviously they're gonna play a part in this entire thing. I think that they're going to either hunt and chase him throughout the entirety of this. And a lot of that's what the focus is going to be, is that hunt for Obi-Wan, because Reva has obviously made it very clear that her sole focus, to the point where she's willing to kill her master, or her, I guess, boss, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think her master is Vader, but
yeah,
their masters, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, you have the Grand Inquisitor, who obviously was the big baddie, and he got taken out relatively quick, which kind of surprised me. I mean, I didn't see that again.
Right.
Didn't see that coming. Right.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I did. I was surprised. I'm like, but like you said, I'm like, if he survives that and then he goes on, somehow he gets. I have. Do you want my speculation on her?
Sure.
What if? Okay. Getting to the MCU. Yeah. What if she's Mace's daughter? And her drive to get Obi-Wan in the same chamber as Vader is to take Vader out, because she's actually good. And she's... So we know, obviously, Anakin had a wife, had kids, didn't go so well. But we also know that Obi-Wan had a girlfriend.
Yep.
At one point, right? What if Mace did as well?
Yep.
Had a daughter. That's his daughter. And she knows that Anakin was in the room when he went out the window. Maybe he did survive. And maybe that's the... Imagine if that story... Now, this is just complete fan speculation. I have no basis whatsoever. I'm just thinking as a creative writer, right? And be like, holy crap, would this not blow people's minds? And like, does a flashback to him surviving and telling her, and then she becomes, because that's what, and she had been trained by Mace, her dad, in the Jedi ways, because that's what they, you know, they announced that in that, that's what the Grand Inquisitor or the Inquisitors are, they're former Jedi hunting their own. Maybe her, like, she gets him in the room, maybe she sees Vader, and it was like, and it just doesn't work, but that was her plan. That's her plan. What do you think of that idea?
I'd be blown away if that's what they did, because Star Wars doesn't tend to go that sort of flight of fancy. They're very pragmatic in how they do things.
Right.
And they don't throw too many curveballs, as in, hey, this is the secret daughter of so-and-so. They tend to be more linear in their storytelling.
Whoa. Andrew, buddy, how do you say in that breath, Star Wars doesn't throw that curveball, when... I wish I could see your face right now, because that's the basis of Empire Strikes Back.
Well, it is, but I mean,
that's how this lore started, when we all ended with Empire going, wait, what? That's his dad?
Yeah. Well, and I agree, but I think now that that's established, and that was early on, but every single story they've told thereafter has been very linear, but, and there haven't been any curves, right?
Right, so but do you see what I said earlier? How, like, this is starting off like A New Hope, and, like, how about they end it on something like that, and we all go, wait, what? That would be so cool.
I would totally be down for that. I just don't see, like, and again, they only have 6 episodes, so... There'd have to be so much explanation on how that happened.
But 6 episodes is 3 movies.
Yep.
It's three movies.
I hope they stick to that.
Imagine if they did that. Because, I mean, six episodes, three movies. Original trilogy, three movies.
Yep.
You could flesh out that same story arc to that exact same timeline. And it's like, so for all intents and purposes, we just saw the first half of Star Wars.
Yep.
A New Hope, right? And then the next one would be the second half. If they were to follow. Yeah. But do you see what I mean? Like, you could just do that. And, like, you could surprise somebody. Like, and, of course, I think that's where, like, we can spitball like this because it has been done before. Like you said, it hasn't been done in a long time, but how cool would that be if they did it? And it's like, we'd just be blown away. We'd be like, and that would be such a great reveal to get Samuel Jackson in there. And you'd be like, oh my God, that would be so cool. And it just, and you get that reveal. And that would have kind of played out to also, it would be a nod to the final trilogy. Where, wait a minute, they did do it because it was like that Leia and Han's son, I'm sorry, he actually turns and helps out Rey, right? In the Emperor's room, and it wasn't, you know, wasn't Palpatine, it was, what's his name, Snoke, right? So he actually turned good, but it wasn't, and we were all hoping that, Kylo would, you know, I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of weird turns in this Star Wars trilogy. I mean, Kylo killed his dad.
True. Right?
So doesn't that lend to anything's possible?
True.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, when I take into account what you said, you know, I did obviously downplay the reveal of Vader, as Luke's father. And I guess, you know, that happened so long ago that, I'm like, of course it is, because we kind of look back and say, you know, and at the time,
it's everybody common was knowledge now, so we forget how big of a deal that was.
Yes, and so when I say that, I don't think that Star Wars, after that big reveal, they haven't taken any real, like, that was the biggest one of the entire one. So they haven't, you know, killing Han, I knew someone was going to die. And I guess the reason I say that is because in the books, they killed off Chewbacca in the books, and they killed off some major characters in the books. So that's why I said, you know, I didn't feel like they would do a lot of, like, they would take chances, you know, and they would do stuff like that, but it wasn't like it was a huge shock, like you could see it coming. So that's why I said, I you know, as cool as it'd be to see something like that, I can't see them taking that kind of a chance with such a limited run to do something so out of the, I mean, it'd be cool if they did, but I can't see them taking six episodes to do that reveal. And if they do it, it will have to be done so well, because the outrage that everybody will have if they waste a second, because, you know, you know what Star Wars fans are like, right? They're super critical of everything. And as you said, you know, they want Star Wars and they want it their way. But if it's not the way that they want, then they're angry, right?
Yeah. But at the same time, you think of, I mean, they did the I Am Your Father reveal. And then in Return of the Jedi, they did Leia's Your Sister reveal, which was not as big as the I Am Your Father, but you also did have in Empire, you had their kiss. So then that made people like, whoa. Yeah. So it still was, that was a fun reveal. I think Kylo being Han and Leia's son, or he wasn't called Kylo. It was,
But, and the thing is, I guess, and that's where I read all the books. So in the books, you know.
So that was already revealed to you before you saw the movie, right?
Well, I knew they had kids. So in the books, they actually had three kids. And Luke and Mara Jade were married, and they had a kid named Ben. So I knew, into Force Awakens, I knew that they were going to reveal Leia and Han's kid, because we knew that they were together, right?
Right. But like I said, so then there's a possibility there. There's a track record, I should say. There's a track record of reveals and motivations of this happening. So that's what was fun about the original, or no, I keep calling it the original, the prequel series, is that meeting Vader at 10, for all intents and purposes, meeting Vader as a 10-year-old and that that kid. And you're like, oh, look at that, which is kind of what we're doing here with Leia and Luke. We haven't met Luke yet. We've seen him from afar. But it's that idea of that prequel trilogy is that we got to see the progression of how a little innocent child can turn into basically one of the most sinister characters in film, right? Yeah. Can they do that again? Can they maybe go in reverse here and they take that sinister character of this woman that's cutting off hands, that's doing all this, but can we flip that in reverse? And now she's actually doing it for good. Maybe. And like you said, it's got to be done well, you know, because the fandom could go crazy, but, and it's going to be a failed attempt. We know that because Obi-Wan's not going to, you know, if according to my fan theory, that she's trying to get Obi-Wan in the same room to take Vader out as a good thing, obviously it doesn't work. And maybe Absolutely. That would be the last time they see each other. The last time, you know, maybe Vader runs. Maybe he takes off. I don't know. You know, who knows? But maybe that's where the Inquisitors, that's why they're done. Is he's like, I don't even want him in my room anymore because I can't trust anybody. Maybe Vader's like, I can't trust anybody. Who knows? There's so many ways they could do it, and it could have nothing to do with it, right?
And then that's the thing is my mind is going wild with all the different ways they could take it. Because you're right. There's nothing out there to say how this is going. So they haven't written the story, so they can go anywhere with it. And, you know, could they have Yoda? That would be amazing to have him mm-hmm. contact Yoda or see Yoda. Because we don't know. There's nothing that really speaks to that.
Right.
So there's so much they could do with it. And I will say that I think this will be very drama oriented. I don't think it will be as heavily action oriented as previous outings. I think because you have Ewan McGregor, who is such a great actor, I think they'll really play up on the drama side of it.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. There are going to be some badass action scenes in this thing. But I think they're really going to really focus on his acting and give him some, I hope they're going to give him some meat to really sink his chops into, because he obviously is an A-list actor and he can do a good job. And I'm hoping that there's going to be some kind of interplay between him and Vader because I mean, obviously at the end, when he finds out that Vader's still alive, just the look in his face, he just realized, oh my God, Anakin didn't die. I left him there to die. He didn't die. And now he's Vader. And I'm not sure if it's remorse or it's fear, knowing that Vader is still alive or Anakin's still alive and now fueled with all of that hatred for what he did to him.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about Ahsoka Tano? Did we get her?
See, and I don't know, because there's never been any indication that Ahsoka and Ben ever interacted aside from when he was Obi-Wan.
Right.
And what I don't want them to do, I don't want them to shoehorn too many things in. And because one of the things I didn't like about Book of Boba Fett was, you know, having Ahsoka and, you know, and Mando and Luke and everybody in there, and it took away from Book of Boba Fett. I hope that they don't try to shoehorn too many characters in there to say, look, we're all connected and look how this is going. Like, if this is going to be a standalone six episode run, tell a very concise story, make it meaningful, you know, bring the callbacks or whatever, if it makes sense, but don't just throw Ahsoka in there unless there's something that she brings into it that really,
she actually could bring a lot though, because they worked together. I mean, she was Anakin's Padawan. Right. Yep. So, and Obi-Wan would know her really well.
Oh, absolutely.
They could see each other. And I would say even in episode 3, because he's taking, what's his name? That guy that pretended to be a Jedi, which was really funny.
Oh, yeah. Nanjiani.
Yep. And so, but where he's sending them, he's like, there's people there that will help you. She could be part of those people that, you know, that could be, I mean, it could be anybody that we're going to find familiar people there, and maybe she's one of them. And then when they see each other, I forget the storyline when she finds out that Anakin's still alive, that Anakin is Vader, because she actually faces off against Vader too.
She does. And she actually wounds him and takes half of his visor away. So he can actually see her with his own eyes, and she realizes it's Anakin.
Right.
And that all comes back. Now, again, I didn't watch much of the Clone Wars, and I'm still... It was so much, I couldn't get into it, and I'm about halfway through Rebels, and I keep starting and stopping, but then other stuff catches my interest, and I end up going down that rabbit hole. So I'm just like, at some point, I have to sit down and watch all of the kind of the important ones for this and make sure that I have them in my mind so I can see what's going on.
Well, see, what's funny is our buddy Steve George had mentioned on Twitter earlier today, I think it was this morning or something, I read it, and he's like, he was saying that the prequel stories didn't do a really good job of fleshing out that relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, because it was too quick, to your point of my idea, right? But but here's the thing, and what I replied to it is, I'm wondering if the entire Clone Wars actually coming out years and years ago gave Disney a roadmap on how Disney Plus could come to be, and that these movies are, they're standalone stories, but if you want more depth, you go back to a series, and the Clone Wars, they fleshed, if all you did was watch the movies, then Obi-Wan might not, I mean, you'd be like, oh, were they really that close? But you've read the books, I watched all of the Clone Wars.
Yep.
So you know, you're getting a more of a backstory there. And this is a business model that can really play forward. Like, if you really liked the movie, hey, we've got more for you over here on Disney Plus. And the genesis of all that could have been just the Clone Wars series, because that came out long before Disney Plus, obviously, right?
Well, and I've said this before, if Disney chooses to tell Star Wars stories in this type of limited run with, basically, as you said, three movies worth of material in a condensed, very concise package, I'm all for that, because they've proved with Mando, they can show an amazing story with amazing writing that is just as compelling as any movie. And I would absolutely sit down. You tell me that, Darth Maul, the limited series coming up, I'm watching that, right? Because it fills in all the stuff, because there is so much lore of every one of these characters. If you go to Wikipedia, they have such an immense backstories. Oh, there is so much stuff you could do that would be interesting. They could do a series on how Luke got the Jedi Temple up and running and what that looked like. Because, that is there. Like, there's a big piece there. Really, they have an amazing business model right now. They can pretty much do whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah, they can flesh characters out with a series, but then can give you an event with a movie.
Yep.
You see what I mean? So, one of the most popular characters is Ahsoka Tano in all of Star Wars. And it's only because she was so fleshed out in Clone Wars. She was the most fleshed out character in all of Star Wars, because we got to see her full arc from being a child to, being a full fledged Jedi that, as you watch the series, you see what happens to her, even more so than we got almost with Anakin. Cause Anakin came into that, in the Clone Wars. Now, obviously, Clone Wars fleshed out Anakin and Obi-Wan's relationship, and you saw a better story arc on it. Actually plays out to watching the prequels again, you start to realize, especially seeing Clone Wars and Attack of the Clones, and then going into Revenge of the Sith, you start to see the, in the background, having watched the Clone Wars, the relationship and them being married. And that's where even Obi-Wan tells him, confides in him, I've been there. I broke it off. and you actually see that, you see his relationship with that woman, and there's so much more that can be fleshed out, but then each movie is the event of certain things. This can all play out in the future. Ewan McGregor could be in another Star Wars movie 3-4 years from now. Absolutely. Playing an older Obi-Wan on an event on maybe, and I'm just throwing something out there, like, what event would it be? Well, him finally killing Darth Maul.
Yep. I'm, you know, all for that.
That could be a movie. That doesn't need to be, you don't need a lot more fleshing out for that. So, and I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, here's the idea, and it could be a completely new event that would just be already fleshed out. And now I think that's why we're not getting any more Star Wars movies for a while. They're going to flesh out some stories and then get you to go back to the theater to see this event or whatever it is. Right. And it's a great business model, I think.
Oh, I mean, I think they're, I, like I said, I think they, Disney obviously is knows what they're doing. And I think that, you know, they learned from the last three movies that they need to slow down and they need to rethink. And they obviously hit a home run with Mando. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit of a foul ball with Book of Boba Fett, even though I loved it. A lot of people are like, meh, right? I still, that, you know, yeah, still enjoyed it.
It could play out to be like a Age of Ultron type thing, where when we saw it, we were like, eh, it's not the strongest of them. But then as you get more story, maybe there's stuff fleshed out of there that you're like, oh my God, I didn't even realize what that was going to mean.
That's a good analogy, because I was not a fan of Age of Ultron when it first came out. I thought, okay, right, why did they make this? And then as the story progressed, so maybe we just need to, and I have enough. I'll give them faith. They can do whatever they want. I will watch it. If they put Star Wars on it, I will watch it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then, and you're going to want to see the next thing, because yep, it might enhance that one. What's amazing, I think the success of Mandalorian was because it was a Star Wars character that was new. So yep, the expectations were limited. You couldn't really be disappointed in whatever they did. Yep. Boba Fett, Book of Boba Fett, which I think I talked to you about the last time you were on, was more about like, that was actually supposed to be like, it's part of the Mandalorian story, but here's just a Boba Fett chapter within, exactly, that book. Yep. And when you listen to it or watch it in that context, it you're a little more forgiving. But at the same time, what I know, and we said this before, but my contention was Boba Fett was like, he already had a lore and they kind, yep, of erased that lore, which they was kind of tough.
Yeah.
I mean, we're running really long here, which is, yep, great. But what about Tamara Morrison showing up in episode two?
I thought that was amazing. I honestly wasn't sure if that was Rex, because I know that they've canonized that Rex is alive, and Rex is the, yeah, old commando in Return of the Jedi. So I was like, is that Rex? But obviously it wasn't, because he would have known who Obi-Wan was.
Exactly.
Right away.
Exactly.
But I thought it was cool. You know, you see the brand new troopers, you know, pushing, yep, by, and he's like, you know, spare some change for a old vet. And, you know, obviously he's a clone, and he had his phase two clone trooper armor on, which I loved it.
Yeah.
And I thought it just amazing. And he had it all painted up, like, oh, gives me goosebumps right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He had the blue from what, the 501.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what he's using to collect the money. So who knows where they, and maybe that's what we see when maybe there's some, we get the clones,
yep,
the rebel, well, some people from Rebels.
Yep.
It could be coming up. It live action, absolutely, versions of Rebels,
yep,
which we already alluded to. What was it? Book of Boba Fett. They, yep, already alluded to, what's his name?
Ezra and Thrawn.
Right. That's right.
It was, that's who Ahsoka is going to look for. So she's, right, trying to find Thrawn to find Ezra, because again, I haven't watched the final season, but Ezra disappears looking for Thrawn, or disappears, and, mm-hmm, I think she's looking for him. Right. So again, yeah, just, I thought it was a great nod. It wasn't over the top. Right.
Right. Right.
And it was just, hey, look, there's Tamara Morrison. Amazing. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, you're like, why would Boba Fett be there? Oh, wait a minute. That's not Boba Fett. That's a clone. Because that's what Boba Fett looks like. All the clones.
And I liked in Boba Fett. I liked in Book of Boba Fett when Bo-Katan said, "I've heard your voice 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, so much stuff. What else do you have? Anything?
I just, you know what? Show? I'm just everything. I mean, obviously, I really liked how Obi-Wan was refusing to use the Force. He was continuing, like, he was, you know, going all martial arts master because he didn't want to use the Force. And I'm not sure if he didn't want to use the Force because it would have alerted the Inquisitors to the Force because they're Force sensitive. So it might have been like putting a bat signal in the sky saying, "Hey, Obi-Wan's here." Or he just wanted to be his, because he said, I, you know, obviously he wasn't going to kill those people. So if he would have used the Force, he would have been forced to kill them because they would have said, "Hey, this guy used the Force." Right.
Right.
And he did everything he could not to use the Force until Leia was in danger. And then he had to.
Right. And then at that point, do you think it's like anything else? Like, I'm just not in like full Jedi shape.
Like, that could be it too.
That was difficult for it. Like, he's suppressed it so much so that he can't be discovered that it's not just like, you know, it's not like breathing. You actually, I mean, you had to be trained to use it, and now not having used it for 10 years and suppressing it for so long, it was hard to pull it back. And then you see him, like, it's such a great piece of, like, it kind of silly acting, but like using his fingers and getting her, like, oh, and then he gets it and saves her at the last second.
Yep. And then obviously the end when he finds out that Vader is alive and whatever happened to him, it obviously looked like they still have a connection and it went out through the Force.
Well, that's the thing, is that did he activate his Force abilities and now she can read and list and feel off of him and go, "Hey, you don't even know." Like, she's reading his mind from a distance. And very similar, here we go, very similar to sister. Oh, you feel it, you know, so he, like we said, like a second ago, like he suppressed all of that, but now it had to come out for, you know, for survival's sake, but now he's been exposed. And now she knows, like, oh, you don't even know, you know, which is really cool. And now you get him going, here's the reveal to Obi-Wan. Wait a minute, he's still alive?
Yep.
Holy, you know, and obviously that's where we're left. It's just so much. 2 episodes, like
said,
buddy.
Yep. 2 episodes. And I said, I'm so impressed. So I at the end of this, we'll have to chat again and see what we think of it the end of this, because this is going to be crazy.
Well, I'm sure we'll be chatting all along.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
We'll record a chat.
Yeah.
Did you see that they did release yesterday on Friday that Andor got its official release date, and it's supposed to be August 31st, right? So that's really cool. So this one takes us almost to the end of June. Then we just have July, August, and then we get into Andor. That's cool. And did you see the announcement of the Star Wars skeleton crew?
No.
Okay.
You know what? I got to take back my nerd card. Yeah.
So, Star Wars Skeleton Crew officially announced for 2023 with Jude Law, and it's a show that will follow a group of 10-year-old kids trying to find their way home. So, that was the opening scene of those kids, like, we got to get out of it. What do we do now? Run, right? There's going to be a show about that with Jude Law. And that's supposed to launch at some point in 2023, next year. So,
amazing.
Yeah, isn't that really cool?
That is really cool.
I got one other for you from the Obi-Wan show. Did you notice the eye at the end of Kenobi in the title sequence?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No.
It's a lightsaber. So you know the title page that says Obi-Wan Kenobi, and at the end, the last letter, obviously, is an eye in Kenobi. It's a lightsaber.
I'm just looking at that now.
But the first, like, Obi-Wan, the first eye in Obi isn't one. But at the very end, the last one, it's a lightsaber.
That is cool. That is a cool little touch. Yep.
Yeah. I saw that. I think I saw it on my second viewing. And I looked at my son and I went, "Hey, that's a lightsaber." And he goes, "Oh, that's cool." I was like, yeah, pretty cool. And it's those little details. I love that crap. I love it. Everything happens for a reason. Everything's done for a reason. It just, and that's the epitome of Star Wars. We might not like it, right?
Exactly.
But it's done for a reason. So cool. So cool. All right. Let me see. Do I have anything else? Oh, did you see? This is the other one. John Archer tweeted out the OLED. LG unveils a Star Wars themed OLED TV.
See, I stay actively away from anything Star Wars related when these are on. I'm like a spoiler hermit. So I don't look up anything Star Wars because I'm so scared of being spoiled by some tie-in. So I actually have gone through all of the Star Wars movies being completely spoiler free. So I now once I'm done watching it, I'll go through and I'll look at everything and I'll be like, oh, cool, this, that, something else. But I very much stay away from social media during these runs. So,
all right. So that's why I could find this stuff. Cause I just looked up, like I knew that there were going to be some announcements on Friday. So I went, I sought them out. But one of them is LG is unveiling a 65-inch TV that is Star Wars themed. Even the remote has like a red glow around it, like a lightsaber. It's supposed to be like that.
My wife is going to kill me.
Yeah. It's like join the dark side and it's supposed to, you know, get you really good black levels. It's got the I think it's got the Empire's logo etched onto the back of it. The box is amazing. Like something that the box that it comes in is a collectible, for God's sakes, right? It's beautiful.
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
I hope that with my divorce settlement that I can afford it.
Well, I see, the thing is, I think from what I read, it only comes in a 65 inch.
That's okay. I've only got a 65. All I can really fit in my space well is a 65. So this
I can only fit 55 in my living room. So I may have to put this 65 inch in my bedroom. My wife's gonna be like, "What the hell?"
Yeah, the back of the television has the Empire logo on it.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of other features too. But yeah, it looks. John Archer has it on Forbes.com and that's where I saw it. And I clicked on it and I read it quickly. I didn't even see a price. Actually I did sign up for the notification. Like if you see it on his tweet, it'll have, like he adds in it, like, or in his article, I'm sorry, in his article, you can click on, it's got a hyperlink to it to take you to sign up to get notifications on when this thing's dropping. So I was like, oh, what the hell? I get enough emails anyways, might as well sign up for this one too. So
yeah, the only reason I probably wouldn't buy it is because eventually televisions become obsolete. So it's a 65 inch obsolete thing that I've got to keep that box around. So
and you got to keep the whole thing.
Yeah,
you're like, I can't get rid of that. But I have, does it become a collector's item that maybe you could sell for more later?
It would absolutely become a collector's item quickly, and then as the technology goes away, I think it will.
Yeah,
go away. But cool.
But the thing, how many people? All right, here we go. How many nerds? We're nerds. How many nerds are buying one for themselves and one to keep in a box unopened?
Oh, I don't think people can. I guarantee that nobody can afford to buy a 65-inch television just to leave unboxed. That's.
I wouldn't say nobody.
Well, I know.
I'm sure there are people, and there are.
A certain set of nerds that'd be like,
"This is an investment."
Yeah.
It might never come to be, but
yeah, there are people that have more disposable cash than brains.
Right.
So
look at all these memorabilia things that go now for millions of dollars. Oh, and it's like,
I know,
you're like, what kind of, well, like, but they know, they're like, one, they're nerds like us. And two, they have the money to appreciate and pay for that stuff. So
yeah, I just open everything up. I enjoy tons of collectibles. Yeah. Yep. I want to enjoy my stuff, and you know what? If I want to sell it afterwards, I don't care if it's used. I enjoyed it the way it was.
Yep, absolutely. So. Absolutely. So,
but I've got to get running because I've
got
a puppy upstairs barking away.
Hey, still, I know. Andrew, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody for listening. But hey, let this be an example to everybody. You want to talk about a movie. You want to talk about a series. You want to talk about anything home theater. You got a subject, just hit me up and say, DJ, I want to talk about this. And if it's topical like this was, we'll wedge it in there. We'll do what we got to do. But if I get enough people doing this, this might not just be a Takeover Tuesday thing. I might have to start doing more days, which is great because this, Andrew, you took a bull by the horns and you said, let's do this. And I have, this is no show prep. All I got to do is watch the show, which I'm doing already. Thank you. And Andrew, honestly, this is what I dreamed of, but I didn't. But this is what I want. This interaction, people taking over and people just talking about what they want to talk about. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. I know anybody still listening did because they were, you know, they're all Star Wars fans. But honestly, Andrew, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And a great example of, yeah, you're the first guest to come back. You're the first listener to come back. That's awesome. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.